Footcast 003. Hi everyone, and welcome to the March edition of Folkcast, the UK's first and best podcast covering the worlds of folk, folk rock, singer-songwriter and roots-based music.
We've got a show packed full of good things, including exclusive interviews, Babba's Folk Notes calendar and a stack of great music.
We'll be talking to one of the godfathers of English folk rock, Steve Ashley, as he prepares to play a huge concert to mark his 60th birthday, and finding out why Jethro Tull's Ian Anderson thinks English folk music is a bit like bungee jumping.
But first, from Cumbria in England, this is 16-year-old accordion sensation Joe O'Connor with an absolutely amazing set of fast reels. Here we are, edition 3 of Folkcast, and we have to say a huge thank you to all the listeners from all around the world who've been subscribing to the show and getting our finger in their ears. And where else would they want it?
Well, quite. But there are thousands of people listening to us from right here in Great Britain to Australia, Canada, Scandinavia and the USA, and quite a few of them are taking the time to email us with comments, some of them even complimentary.
Yes, we seem to be doing something right. And we've been inundated with people who want to get their music played on the show. People like Joe, though, with his take on traditional dance music. And people like this, Brighton's Mountain Firework Company.
The exit's at the back, love, the exit's at the back. How come you've not run through it yet, left me and not looked back? Well, I don't know. I don't know what nothing left in me for me to do that I don't know.
The Exits at the Back by the Mountain Firework Company. And as with all the artists whose music we play, there's a link to their website from our show notes, so you can easily visit them, hear more tunes and buy their album. And the Mountain Firework Company's website is well worth visiting, as it's one of the cleverest and most beautiful websites that I've ever seen.
And me too. It's very impressive, isn't it?
Must have cost a fortune.
Well, we've had loads of feedback to our first two shows, and typical was this email from Morris man and musician Guido Rincon, who writes, "As I often do on a Sunday morning, I was tidying up my barn, which is also my home studio, and to make this chore more bearable, I thought I'd try and find something interesting to listen to. After a quick Google search, I came across your website and have just listened to both of your excellent podcasts. I think your folkcasts are the most interesting podcasts I've downloaded. I really enjoyed the music, a lot of which is completely new to me, and I thought the interviews were very interesting. I shall make a point of downloading future programmes and look forward to the next one. Keep up the good work." Well, thanks for those encouraging words, Guido. And as you like to have a bit of a dance, obviously, we thought maybe you'd like to stretch your legs to this one, and it could make the housework, or is it barn work, go just a little bit faster.
You've just heard The Drovers by Audio Circus, a five-piece band from Old South Wales, the original South Wales, who describe themselves as acoustic indie folksters, and who could disagree? They're currently working on their debut album, which will be available from their website and beyond very soon.
Now then, the first of our interviews. In the 1960s and 70s, Steve Ashley played in duos and bands and as a solo artist to help create some of the bedrock of the emerging folk rock scene. His solo album, Stroll On, is an absolute classic, and he later recorded with various members of Fairport Convention to make the Family album. Steve is celebrating his 60th birthday this month with a massive concert in his hometown of Cheltenham in England, and Wids and I took the chance to have a natter with him about the gig and his individual approach to music.
Hi Steve, how are you doing?
Oh, very well, thanks. Rather terrifying, this new technology, but it's good to be here.
Yeah, we should explain to listeners we've had some wonderful technical problems, but it's great to get you on at last. This whole recording of phone call business is new turf for everybody in podcasting, so we're breaking new ground, and that's always great news.
It's not new to MI5, I have to say.
No, we don't have a plastic rock out in the garden that we can record things on. We're here to talk about Steve's 60th birthday party. First of all, give us the details of where and when, Steve, and then people...
Okay, I'll make sure this is loud and clear. It's at the Bacon Theatre in Cheltenham, and it's on Sunday, the 12th of March. For tickets and stuff, the Bacon Theatre phone number is 01242 258002. Or you can get them from the Cheltenham Town Hall box office, which is 01242 227979. Tickets are £13, £11 concession. Fantastically reasonable. I mean, when I tell you what's on, it's crazy, really. But there it is. For all the kind of details and information, it's probably best to go onto my website, and that's www.steveashley.co.uk.
So, tell us about this, the concert, Steve.
The 60th was looming, you know, and I thought, well, I did gigs on my 40th and 50th down here, and they were kind of more informal sort of gigs, really. And this time I thought it would be really good to sort of see if I could get together as many people that I've played with in the past, in various bands and lineups and stuff. And those people that have covered songs and stuff that I've written. So it was on that basis, really. And I called Robert Kirby because many years ago in Cheltenham, we did a concert with a string section. Robert came down here with an orchestra shortly after I'd recorded my second album, Speedy Return. Mm-hmm. And we did a concert of all the songs that Robert had arranged for Stroll On, the first album, and Speedy Return are here, and it was just a fantastic gig. And I always felt that it would be great to do that again, you know, or something similar. And I'd sort of floated the idea to Robert, thinking he'd say, sorry, I'm really busy, throughout the whole of March. And no, he was dead on for it. So that was that. And then the next thing was, well, I thought, you know, I really put the boat out and said, I'll ask the Fairporters because the other gig that we did years ago, back in 79, was we did a thing called the Family Show, which was a series of gigs, concerts, which were based around an album I did with Dave Pegg's studio in Cropredy, with Simon Nicol and Bruce Rowland. The Fairport at the time, really, apart from Sorg, he didn't take part, but Chris Leslie did, because Chris and I were, in those days, we were working as a duo. So we did a few gigs. We did The Half Moon and Banbury here in Cheltenham, and so I thought, well, that would be great if we could do that again, or a kind of selection from that to show. That would be brilliant to do the orchestral gig and the Family Show.
Yonder comes the family in all their ugly glory. Dad and mother, son and daughter, and their old grandma. Driving down the motorway, they take the inner lane. going on a Sunday spin, and never mind the rain. Family love is a joy to see. Family love is a joy to see. Mother has a cardigan, it's a hanging around her shoulders. Everything her hubby wears, she bought for him herself. And she bought the ski pants that Jenny hates to wear. The underclothes for Ronnie and the net for Granny's hair. Family love is a joy to see. Family love is a joy to see. We take a break for sandwiches while Jenny spends a penny. Ronnie has been sitting on them, but they're not too bad. Father's going pom pom pom, mother pours the tea. Granny's special chocolate is melting on her knee. Family love is a joy to see. Family love is a joy to see. Family love is a joy to see.
The concert's obviously going to be a great big celebration of things you've done previously. Are you going to use it as a springboard to new stuff as well? Is the new Steve Ashley
product? I don't know about springboard. It's a springboard is quite a terrifying prospect for a 60-year-old. Well, the concert is a bit of a kind of memory lane job. We'll be doing songs through various things that have happened, various records and bands and things. But I will be doing a couple of new songs. And in fact, I've enough to make it. I mean, when it's over, I certainly want to sit down and sort out a new album. So hopefully I'll be getting down to that next year, over the next year. But I tend to take a long time putting records together. It's just the way it is, I suppose, for me. I take a long time thinking about songs and how they might fit together, you know. So it's been a long, slow process, and it's unlikely to get any faster.
Hi, Steve. This is Ken here. You know, I was looking at your discography earlier.
Yes.
Doing a little bit of research, and I thought perhaps I'd print it off, and then I realised I didn't have enough paper. So you've never counted the number of projects you've been involved in, have you?
No, I haven't.
That's a lot. But I also noticed that you play a number of different instruments.
I play quite a few. Yeah, and I play them. I play the string ones back to front and upside down. I'm left-handed.
Oh, right. That's right.
So that's rather a kind of antisocial thing to do.
I'm very curious about that. I don't know how anyone can play the guitar, not just left-handed, but upside down.
Well, it's an ordinary guitar. When I first somebody lent me a guitar back in the 60s and showed me a couple of chords, which I kind of learned upside down, you know. And once I'd got three chords together and I could suffer the pain, you know, I kind of managed to sing a couple of songs. And I just couldn't face the prospect of finding a left-handed guitar and or restringing it or anything. And it meant that if I went around somebody's house, I could always play the guitar, you know, because there'd be a right-handed guitar. And it was like that, really. But it was a major setback as well, because, you know, it was hard work finding out how to do it. There are not many other people that will kind of show you stuff and unless you put your head upside down.
So the whole process, was it completely intuitive or did you approach it?
No, it wasn't really, because my friend Dave Menday that I mentioned earlier in the Tinderbox, he's a very good acoustic guitar player. And he showed me quite a few guitar tunings and, you know, some sort of, which were helpful to me because, you know, when I drop the E string down to D, you know, I tend to use the E's down to D quite a lot as an A tuning I use and one or two others. But this made it possible to sort of think of things. And also they kind of made, in the songwriting style that I'd adopted in the early days, those kind of tunings would lead to modal melodies and,
sure,
you know, kind of things that would be, that I would intuitively connect to the sort of songs that I've been singing, traditional songs. So it's a kind of an individual, rather an odd way of doing things. When Dave and I were working together, I didn't play much guitar because he was so good. I played the whistle and the mouth organ and sang. And then when we split up, I had to sort of sit down and really kind of work at, you know, how to play the guitar, which I'm still working at all these years later. You know.
Yeah, so we're all working on that still.
I don't think there are names for what I do. Because, well, because my thumb would come down onto the finished E string. The arpeggio is upside down as well, and I've developed a sort of a technique where I use my thumb on the bass strings a lot. A kind of percussive effect. I've also got a little sort of frailing type banjo pick thing that I learned, but occasionally that sort of works, but it's very odd. But most of the time, I never think of myself as a, you know, a guitarist in the sense of it being a kind of virtuoso thing. You know, I mean, I use it to accompany myself and I'm singing, you know, essentially, and I mean
so it's a very individual approach.
Yeah, it's just supporting the song most of the time, you know, but I really enjoy it, and I love the kind of whole thing of exploring new chords and things that sort of come off a guitar sometimes when you're songwriting. I don't know if you've...
Well, of course, if you do things differently, I mean, as far as tunings or finger styles go, then it can result in unexpected bits and pieces, can't it?
That's right. Yeah. And sometimes, I don't know if you've had this experience, but, you know, you can be kind of fiddling around on the guitar, and it's almost as if you release a tune from the neck, you know, it's kind of as if it's there already, and you say, oh, what's that, you know, and you play a couple more notes and you realize that it's a tune, you know. And a lot of the songs have come that way, you know, just by trying out different things, putting fingers in unusual places and stuff. And
that's right.
So it's been a kind of a voyage of discovery over the years, really.
As far as the songwriting goes as well, is that, would you say that is pretty intuitive or individual in the same way? Or have you thought much about song structure? Do you approach it in a technical way or just an intuitive kind of way?
It's variable. Some of the songs have kind of hit me kind of hard, you know, quickly. Somebody said once, you know, there are songs that you write and there's songs that you have to write down. Mm-hmm. And that occasionally happens, you know. I just kind of grab something and sing it into an answer phone or something.
What I find is that I can often get those moments of inspiration, but to actually get something finished seems to take a fair degree of discipline.
Yes, it does. But the funny thing about it is some of them have actually kind of come really quickly, even...
From start to finish?
Yeah, you know, within a day or a morning or something. And and then there are others that I've kind of worked on, you know, fussed around with for years. Mm. And in fact, there's one on the last album, Everyday Life, that... I did. I started writing it in the 70s, and I used to go and sing it on concerts, which is called Gog and Magog. And it wasn't, you know, years and years later that I came back to it and rewrote it and thought, that's that's it. And I've got it now. That's what it is. So that took about 30 years to get that one right. Yeah. But it is a strange process.
Just one other thing that I wanted to ask you about as well. I was listening to the track... Love in a Funny Way, and I was very interested in by the fact that you know, how you had the acoustic guitar and the drum kit, but there was no bass guitar in there.
It was recorded in 1971, and there were people on the very early sessions like Tim Rennick, and the first time I met Dave Mattox was back then, and there were three or four songs that didn't appear in the end because it took us 3 years to get a label for it because it was such an expensive production, you know, with the strings and everything. Yeah. We had 30-odd rejections, you know, and I was completely crazy by the end of it. And when we finally got the thing out, and that was one of the songs that was dumped, and I always felt sort of sad because it's got something, it's an unusual sort of atmosphere to it.
Well, it has a very strong character to it, doesn't it?
Again, that was Robert Kirby's arrangement. It's a lovely arrangement. I mean, it was really a real pleasure working with Robert, and it has been every time we've done anything. And the great thing about this show is that we're doing the songs from Stroll On and Speedy Return, but Robert's just told me the other night that he's written a new arrangement for one of the songs on Everyday Lives, the Topic album I did. There's a song about apples and orchards called Say Goodbye. And I've always thought it would be great to hear some strings on that. So that's going to happen. And I won't hear it till the rehearsal before the show, you know. But with the string arrangements and all the brass arrangements also, there's such a character to that stuff that it can sort of swamp things sometimes, you know. I found with Robert, he's got a real skill for totally understanding what the song's about. And also, we had a lot of conversations sort of talking about what kind of music, it needed to be. So, sure. You know.
Well, that's the kind of arranger you need.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Vaughan Williams and Delius on the first one, and there were certain passages that I sort of sang to him that, you know, that sort of counter melody or things that I wanted to see if we could include in the arrangements. And But the result was sort of much more amazing than you know one could have hoped for, really.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Steve. You have a great concert and you have a great birthday, and I'm sure everybody who comes along and packs out the Bacon Theatre on Sunday, March the 12th, will have a fantastic time.
That's really great, and nice to be one of the early folk casters, because you know, in 50 years' time, when this people will say, "Oh, do you remember the first folk cast?" You know, I was one of those. That was a real treat. The other thing I wanted to say before I go off, there are people sort of joining this thing as time goes on, and we've got Martin Alcock. I think we said we've got Phil Beer, Maggie Boyle, Martin Brinsford, Paul Burgess, Paul Downs. And we've got the Steve Ashley Band, Ragged Robin, Tinderbox, Chris Leslie, Simon Nickel, Dave Pegg, and the orchestra conducted by Robert Kirby. I think that's it.
Is that all?
That's it. £13. I must be crazy. We could have made so much more money from this gig.
Is there any room for any audience members in this?
Oh, no, that's out of the question.
Is the gig going to be recorded at all?
Yeah, I think we probably will. Yeah, we're still sorting it out. It's quite a technical challenge, but nothing like the technical challenge that you guys have taken on with this one.
No, I think you've got to get that down on disc. That'll be an excellent show. All the best then, Steve, and
thanks
have a happy
much.
Birthday.
Yeah,
good
yeah all the best.
Cheers now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
I get this feeling every time that we're apart. I've got this feeling and it's running through my soul. I've got this feeling I'm about to lose control. I lie on my bed at night and wonder, could this be some kind of magic spell you put me under? I've got this feeling and it's pounding in my brain. I get this feeling and it's driving me insane. I've got this feeling, it's been bugging me all day. I've got this feeling and it just won't go away. I lie in my bed and wonder whether there'll be an end to time we spend together. Why do I say the things I say?
I do what I do? Why is it hard to find my way? I'm just trying to get closer to you. Why can't I find the words to tell you how I feel? I need to hold you just to know that you are real. I've got a feeling I'm about to cross the line. I've got this feeling everything will be just fine. I've got this feeling and sometimes it gets too much. I get this feeling when you're close enough to touch. I lie on my bed and think about you. All of the sleepless nights that I'm without you. Why do I say the things I say? Why do I do what I do? Why is it hard to find my way? I'm just trying to get closer to you. Why do I say the things I say? Why do I do what I do? Why is it hard to find my way? I'm just trying to get closer to you. Closer to you. Closer to you.
Great to talk to Steve as he prepares for what sounds like one hell of a night. The songs were Family Love from the Family album and Closer to You by Dick Cadbury. Dickie's well known for his inventive bass playing and vocals with 70s prog folk pioneers Decameron, and is a long-time collaborator with Steve, and he will be on stage with Steve for that 60th birthday party gig.
Okay, now for something completely different.
That sounds familiar.
I'm sorry, I'll read that again. And now for something completely different. The world of weird folk, and it doesn't get much weirder than English Heretic. Not just a band, but also a project to maintain, nurture, and care for the psycho-historical environment of England. Availed of the services of some of the country's very finest occult archaeologists, astral geographers, and mystical toponymists, whatever they are, English Heretic aim to help people decode and realise the alchemical ciphers and conspiratorial interplay of the buildings and landscapes around them. Here, from their brand new, compelling and rather spooky 2006 annual, is Ephialates. You won't hear this on Mike Harding.
I wonder why.
The poet identifies himself with the god of the waxing year, and his muse with a goddess. The rival is his blood brother, his other self, his weird. All true poetry celebrates some incident or scene in this very ancient story. And the three main characters are so much a part of our racial inheritance that they not only assert themselves in poetry, but recur on occasions of emotional stress in the form of dreams, paranoid visions and delusions. The weird or rival often appears in nightmare as the tall, lean, dark-faced bedside spectre or prince of the air who tries to drag the dreamer out through the window so that he looks back and sees his body still lying rigid in bed. The goddess is a lovely, slender woman with a hooked nose, deathly pale face, lips red as raspberries, tarteringly blue eyes, and long fair hair. Her names and titles are innumerable. In ghost stories, she often figures as the White Lady, and in ancient religions, in the British Isles of the Caucasus, as the White Goddess.
Please come. Please come.
Spirit of the dark, take thou my blood, my flesh, my skin, and walk.
Please come.
Spirit of the dark, take thou my blood, my flesh, my skin, and walk. Spirit of the dark, take thou my blood.
Black May, black Helda, she ran with hare and hound. In goat's skin slain her annual king. Black May, black Helda, she ran with hare and hound. In goat's skin slain her annual king. If all those young men were like rushes a-growing, then all their maidens would take sighs and mow them. Young men, they run like hares in the mountainside, and all the maidens turn hounds to hunt them down. Shall have satisfied your rage and I expire. My ghost shall haunt your every night. I will mangle your cheeks with my curved nails, and such is the power the manes give to our dead souls. Every night encumbered upon your troubled breast, I will chase off your sleep with fear and trembling. Black May, black Helda, she ran with hare and hound. In goat's skin slain her annual king.
Fialates from English Heretic there. I urge you to visit their webpage on the Woven Wheat Whispers website. There's a link from the show notes, of course. And hey, don't have nightmares.
Now it's time for the Folk Notes calendar. Legend has it that he makes sundials run widdershins, and the weird women of Wigan whisper that he won't tread on the cracks in the ley lines. We just know him as Baba.
Although we think of March as the start of spring, in the times before electricity and gas, this was still a dark and cold season. And the way the price of electricity and gas is going, it'll be a dark and cold season again before long. Anyway, as to the festivals in March, well, March the 7th was the day of the former Bourne Fair, which was mainly notable for its promotional rhyme, Peterborough for pride, Stamford for the poor, Deeping for a rogue, and Bourne for a whore. On the farms, the sowing of seeds was normally completed by this day, which was known as Hopper Cake Night, a hopper being a seed basket. Small buns were dipped in spiced ale and then eaten. Lots of ribald singing helped drive away the birds from the seeds. Around this time, too, the male hare goes into his mating frenzy. The mad March hare appears demented, throwing himself about the fields. The power to transform into this most wanton of creatures was one of the accusations often levelled against alleged witches. Now, March the 11th is Penny Loaf Day in Newark in Nottinghamshire. During the English Civil War, a vicar named Hercules Clay repeatedly dreamed that his house would burn down, so he evacuated the property. And indeed, his house did burn down, due to an attack on Newark by the Roundheads. The Reverend Clay left £100 to distribute loaves amongst the poor, in thanks for his good forewarning, and a service is still held around this date. But the money for the loaves is long gone. The Kipling Coates Derby is held on the third Thursday in March at Market Weighton in the East Riding of Yorkshire. Said to be the oldest flat race in England, it covers a distance of 4 miles over farm lanes and tracks. There's a first prize of £50, however, the second horse home can receive a higher amount, because the second prize is made up of the sum of all the entrance fees, each £4.25. But in keeping with the unusual, no one knows how many horses and riders will enter the race until the actual morning of the race itself. Now, St. Patrick's Day, on March the 17th, is a cause for celebration amongst the Irish wherever they are. Historically, Patrick was a man born in Norton in Northamptonshire in 389 AD, who was captured by raiders and sold into slavery in Ireland. One of the earliest self-written texts was left by him, but his myth grew out of control, linked to druids, getting rid of all the snakes in Ireland, cursing fens, escaping pagan rule, all of it created to bolster his myth. March the 21st is the most important festival day of the month, the spring equinox. From now on, the light of day outstrips the dark of night, and pagans and druids all hold ceremonies to mark the start of spring. The sun god Bran is said to be buried at Tower Hill in London, and druids celebrate the equinox there. In the 1950s, their processions through fog-filled streets enlivened the post-war capital. Until 1752, incredible as it now seems, March the 24th was New Year's Eve in England. When the calendar was changed, 11 days were lost, which caused riots demanding that the days be returned. Until then, old New Year's Eve had been on April the 5th, and that's the reason that financial and tax years still start on that date. There are many old sayings around this time advising farmers not to be fooled by any March weather. Better slaughter in the country than that March should come in warm, as they say on the Isle of Man. A warm March predicts a poor summer. And finally, on March the 31st, beware the blackthorn winter. Blackthorns sprout their blossom ahead of other plants and can find themselves chilled by the still wintry weather. You can read more about the traditions of March at www.wovenwheatwhispers.co.uk, but that'll do for this month. I'll be back in April, so until then, this is your Uncle Baba saying, fare thee well.
Cheers, Baba. The music there was by Misericordia. Now, after all that, let's warm things up a bit. This is Summerflower from Pete Abbott.
the naked light of day, with the sun upon your face, there's a child in your eyes. The secrets that you hide, the many tears you've cried, you cannot disguise. 'Cause I can see your heart, and I can see the scars that made you who you are. You live a gentle life, though it's no paradise. No stroll out on the shore. He never holds your hand. He never understands. Now what you're crying for? You want it so to be a perfect harmony, but it's hard to stay in time when the words don't rhyme. You have to make the best of what is left to come. Leave it all behind. Carry on, just carry on. Summer flower falling in the autumn wind will hold out for the spring, and it will come. Dies a constant sacrifice, a heavy load to bear. Though you play along, you're really not that strong. The burden is to share a lover or a friend. A stronger hand to lend. Step aside, you'll find a way. Who can say? If only you would give yourself just half a chance, the seed of new romance can start to grow. You never know. The summer flower falling in the autumn wind will hold out for the spring, and it will.
Summer Flower there from Pete Abbott, featuring Neil Marshall on percussion and our very own Ken Nicol on a lovely bit of haunting Spanish guitar. What's all that about then, Ken?
It's strange you should describe it as haunting. That's probably the only time I've ever used a nylon strung guitar on a recording, and the guitar itself was actually left to me by this lady that I used to teach guitar to. She died when she was about 96. She left the guitar to me, and that was the very first time I used it on a recording.
Did you start teaching it when she was a child?
It felt like it at times, but it's quite an interesting story, you know. When I first came back from America, I had to do a little bit of teaching in order to survive, and I put an ad in the local newspaper. And what happened was she cut this ad out and she carried it. Apparently, she told me she carried it around with her for a long time because she didn't have an awful lot of trust in people. But then she said that one day she heard her father's voice tell her that it was okay to give me a ring. And she was in her 80s at the time, and that's when I started teaching her.
Blimey. Oh, well, there's hope for all of us after all, then, perhaps. Who knows? Anyway, on with the show. Jethro Tull are on tour in the UK this month. See the show notes page at www.folkcast.co.uk for details of where and when. And I'd say that when they were recording albums like Songs from the Wood, Heavy Horses and Stormwatch, they were one of the very best folk rock outfits that there's ever been. Mem Mani and Anderson has been influenced by folk music and even produced an album for your mob, Ken.
Yeah, Steel Ice Spans, Now We Are Six, but that was back in 1974, long before my time.
Yeah, you were nowt but a glimmer in Maddie Pryor's eye, eh?
I'm not going to tell her that.
OK, back to Ian Anderson. I grabbed a chat with the man that all Tull fans know as the Headmaster and asked him about his folk influences and his attitudes to the music, and his reply took me by surprise. Roll it.
I thought about this the other day when I caught a snippet of what I think may have been some folk awards on BBC Radio.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And as this programme started, because I think it had been Johnny Walker had been on, and because I did do Johnny Walker's show a few days later, I was just kind of half paying attention to Johnny Walker, and then suddenly this folky music began, and my immediate reaction was, oh God, you know, I was going to find Channel, you know, Radio 4 or Classic FM or something, because it started off with this thing that is what I have to say I don't really enjoy about English folk music, which is a kind of Morris dancing, Morris minor, half-timbered estate car kind of thing. It just is steeped in something rather parochial and in the past, and I'm never comfortable with that. I mean, I just think folk music is worth so much more than that. The Irish never seem to find problems bringing it into more contemporary music. They certainly don't in India, where I was recently. It's, as always, you hear a very, very strong Indian folk and traditional influence in contemporary music, be it the cheesy Bollywood stuff or you know, contemporary rock bands, hip-hop bands, the stuff that India does, and still manages to retain a lot of its folk culture. It doesn't seem to be ashamed of it, doesn't seem to be embarrassed about it, but for some reason that's the way it comes across to me, that way anyway, in the UK, that it's either traditional or, save for probably a tiny handful of relatively unknown musicians and bands, it just peters out, and then something else reemerges as full-blown rock and pop music that has little, if any, relationship to our musical heritage. We seem to collectively want to make music that is either more imitative of American music, complete with spoof American accents, which I've always found completely
absolutely absurd.
Yeah. You know, or we do this rather mannered kind of English pop thing, which is I suppose, epitomised by bands like Roxy Music.
So we're unlikely to see an album of traditional songs covered by Jethro Tull, then?
No, but then, you know, I do use traditional music as an influence to traditional British and many other forms of European folk and classical and church music. I've always used those influences in my music, but I'm talking about other people rather than me. I mean, I do it, but I wouldn't say I've ever been treated very kindly by the press or the media for having that kind of slightly folky thing. I've struggled with it, trying to embrace elements of British folk music in perhaps a sort of more serious and thoughtful and respectful way, but then it sounds perhaps a little contrived and maybe a little bit too, you know, folk prog rock. If you do it in a kind of bit more light-hearted and upbeat way, then it seems like you're just, you know, the Wurzels with a flute. Or it's really hard to make it work, which is why I suppose even most people don't do it at all, you know. And the very few people that do use a little of that kind of folky thing in their music probably, you know, will tend to be sneered at or sniggered at behind, well, not even behind cupped hands. So it's a tricky one to bring alive. But we seem as a nation to be a little ashamed of our folk music in some way. And I have to say, intrinsically in me too, I get that jittery feeling as soon as I hear strains of traditional English folk music. It immediately, you know, kind of gets me a little on edge. I don't find it comfortable either, but there's some great musical ideas, some great melodies. The lyrics generally are completely unsingable. I mean, there are some great folk songs that are, you know, obviously handed down and have been changed, you know, a word here, a phrase there, over the generations, and perhaps contain some really great lines, but they're really hard to sing for me. I just can't. I find it impossible to sing. You know, whether you know even some of the. I mean, if you go through the Steel Eye Span or the Fairport Convention back catalogue, you know, there's just such a plethora of wonderful songs in there. But whereas they can sing them and sort of get away with them, I just can't do that. I beg, borrow, and steal a little bit of, a little nuance here and influence there, a sort of flavour of it. I could never be an authentic folky, and as I say, I don't think I would really want to be. Although I respect the music, it still sometimes sets my teeth,
well, you just have to try harder, I think that's the thing.
Well, that's right, a bit like Blackpool, you know. So, I mean, Blackpool and folk music, you know, the thing, and country and western, and bungee jumping and golf. I mean, they're not things that I rule out of my life forever. I just have a kind of an uneasy relationship with them at the moment.
Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull there. So, dear listener, what do you reckon to that? Is he right about English folk? Is it an embarrassment? Is there a bridge to be made between the tradition and modern pop music? Or is he talking out of his flute?
Well, obviously, he's never heard the Morrison Band.
Thank you.
that's about it for another Folkcast. We'd love to hear your opinions on all the music we've played this month and on Ian Anderson's take on folk music.
And remember to visit the show notes page on our website, www.folkcast.co.uk, and check out all the artists we've played this month.
Our thanks to Steve Ashley, Ian Anderson, Baba, Ian and Mark at Woven Wheat, and everyone that we've played this week. And to you for listening and, I hope, subscribing for free via our website. Send your email comments to contact@folkcast.co.uk, and you can even record your comments as an MP3 and send them as an attachment so that you can play them on a future show.
If we like them.
If you're a musician and want to get played on Folkcast, get in touch. If you're a music fan and want to hear more of any of the artists that we've already played, get in touch.
Right, here to play us out are Silver Wheel. Now, didn't we play them on the very first Folkcast, Wids?
Yes, and I gravely insulted them by announcing to the entire world that they come from London. I don't know what got into me, because they're actually from Sheffield. That's in Yorkshire.
London? Yorkshire? I don't know which is worse.
Anyway, by way of penance, and because they're great, here is the traditional song Ye Jacobites by Name, originally written down by Robbie Burns. He was less than keen on the Jacobites by the sound of it, and as they chose our hometown of Preston to have a major scrap back in 1715...
That's 5:15.
In the year 1715, we don't like them very much either. A right mess they made. We'll be back at the start of April. Until then, have at them, Silver Wheel!
Ye Jacobites by name, lend an ear, lend an ear. Ye Jacobites by name, lend an ear. Ye Jacobites by name, your faults I must proclaim. Your doctrines I will blame. You shall hear, you shall hear. Your doctrines I will blame. You shall hear.
What is right and what is wrong? By the law, by the law. What is right and what is wrong? By the law. What is right and what is wrong? The short sword and the long. How weak come and the strong. For to draw, for to draw. How weak come and the strong. For to draw.
Ye Jacobites by name, lend an ear, lend an ear. Ye Jacobites by name, lend an ear. Ye Jacobites by name, your faults I must proclaim. You shall hear, your doctrines I will blame. You shall hear.
What makes heroic strife? Famed afar, famed afar. What makes heroic strife? Famed afar. What makes heroic strife? To whet the assassin's knife. Oh, hunt a parent's life with bloody war, oh, bloody war. Oh, hunt a parent's life with bloody war.
By name, lend an ear. Ye Jacobites by name, Your faults I must proclaim. Your doctrines I will blame. You shall hear, you shall hear. Your doctrines I will blame. You shall hear.
But no, our thanks to Steve Ashley, Ian Anderson, Baba, Ian and Mark at Woven Wheat, and everyone who we have played this month. Keep saying week, don't we? Our thanks to Steve Ashley, Ian Anderson, Baba, Ian and Mark at Woven Wheat,